When I saw you, I knew at once that I had erred, and you were not my father, but my brother. I was too anguished to confront you then, and now you are in Littleton, a place to which I cannot afford to sail. Sir, I write with a request, a prayer. I have spent my father's £20 on this journey and other necessaries, and I have not the means to return home. I have sold my coat, but it fetched little more than half the price I paid, for the broker did not believe it was a fine one. I have now but pennies to my name. You are a dignitary, sir, a man of politics, philosophy, and law. I do not need to meet you, but I beseech you for your charity, believing you a good and Christian man, and because I will remain always your brother, Crosby Wells.
There was a forwarding address beneath his name, a post office box in Dunedin. Moody put down the letter with a beating heart. So Lauderback and Crosby Wells were brothers. That was a turn of events indeed. But Lauderback had not mentioned this connection to the magistrate when he admitted to having arrived at Crosby Wells' deathbed half an hour too late. Nor had he confessed it to his friend, the shipping agent Thomas Balfour. What reason did he have to conceal his brother's illegitimate parentage? Shame, perhaps? Or something else? Moody took up the bundle and moved to the window, where there was more light. He unfolded the next letter and tilted it towards the glass.
Dunedin, September 1852. Sir, 6 months have passed since I first wrote, and I fear by your silence that I have offended you. I cannot recall my phrasing exactly, but I do recall that in my last address I styled myself your brother, and perhaps that caused you grief. I imagine that it pains you to know that your father was a less than perfect man. I imagine that you wish it otherwise. If the above is true, then I beg forgiveness. Sir, in these past months my fortunes have fallen further still. I assure you that as a whoreson I am not unaccustomed to the beggar's life, but to beg a man a second time is shame indeed. Nonetheless, I write in desperation. You are a man of means. The cost of a third-class ticket is all I ask, and thenceforth you needn't hear of me again. Here in Dunedin I save my pennies as I can. I've tried my hand at navvy work, but find myself ill-suited to the trade. I've been laid very low by chilblains and fever and other ills pertaining to the cold. I've not worked as steadily as I should have liked to do. My desire to meet our father, Alistair Lauderback Sr., has not diminished, and I am conscious of the passing days, for as I told you, he confessed to me in writing that he was very close to death. I should like to speak to him but once before that sad event, just so that we might lay eyes on one another and speak as men. Please, sir, I ask you on my knees to buy my passage home. You would not hear of me again, I swear. I am nothing more than your grateful friend, Crosby Wells.
Moody hardly paused before turning to the next. With his free hand, he fumbled for a chair and sank into it, still reading.
Dunedin, January 1853. Sir, how ought I read this silence? That is the question on my mind. I believe you are in receipt of my correspondence, but for some reason of principle you decline to answer or to extend a scrap of charity to your father's bastard child. These letters did not take dictation. This is mine own hand, sir, and I can read as well, and though I flatter myself, I shall tell you that my parish priest, Father Wells, remarked more than once that I was an uncommonly bright boy. I state all this to make it clear I am no scoundrel, though my station is a low one. Perhaps you wish for proof of my bastardy. Perhaps you think this is an attempted swindle. I say, on my honour, it is not. Since I wrote to you last, my needs and wishes are unchanged. I do not want to be in this country, sir. I never sought this life. For £20 I would return to England and never speak your name again. Yours truly, Crosby Wells. Dunedin, May 1853. Sir, I know from the provincial papers that you have taken up the post of superintendent of the proud province of Canterbury. You took the post and offered up your honorarium for charity, a noble gesture, sir, but one I observed with sadness. I wondered if you thought of me as you gave that £100 away. I have not the means to travel to Littleton, where you are, much less back home. I have never felt more alone than I do in this forsaken land. Surely you will understand this as a British man yourself. We have creeping damp and frost indoors. I wake most mornings with a rime of ice across my legs. I am not suited to the hard frontier, and mourn my circumstances daily. Sir, in this year past, I have saved only £2, 10 shillings and 4p, and I have now spent 4p upon these pages and postage. I beg of you to help. A man in need, Crosby Wells. Dunedin, October 1853. Sir, I write in great dejection. I am certain now that you will never write back to me, and even I, a Horson, am too proud to beg again. I am a sinner like our father, the apple falling never far, as the common saying goes. But in my youth I was taught that charity is a primary virtue, and one to be practised most especially when that virtue is not due. You, sir, are not behaving as a Christian man. I do believe that if our respective circumstances were reversed, I would not maintain the cruel silence that you keep with me. Rest assured, I will not beg your charity again, but I wish to make my dejection known to you. I have been following your career in the pages of the Otago Witness, and I know you are a man of no small means and much opinion. I have neither privilege, but notwithstanding my abject position, I am proud to call myself a Christian man, and if you were in need, sir, I should turn my pockets out to help you as your brother. I do not expect that you will reply, and perhaps I will die soon, and you will never hear from me again. Even in the likelihood of that event, I am proud to remain yours very sincerely, Crosby Wells. Dunedin, January 1854. Sir, I must apologise for the letter I wrote you last, as it was written bitterly and with the purpose of insulting you. My mother warned me never to touch a pen when in a temper, and now I see the wisdom in her words. My mother you have never known, of course, but she was quite a beauty in her time. Sue Butcher was her name in life, God rest her soul, though she also went by other names better suited to her line of work, and liked to invent new ones at her pleasure. She was our father.